from deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, one more time from New Orleans, Louisiana, and there is news to report here. There's zillions of visitors down here for the last weekend of the Jazz and Heritage Festival. Maybe too many. I don't know. There's never too many. There just might be too many in one particular spot, but there's never too many. But this is a week in which it became known that New Orleans' population has increased 14% since just last summer, most of it in the hardest hit areas of the city. It's up 14%, according to this this latest report. So somebody's coming back to do something. And when they do come back, they've got a very, very interesting surprise, because I was talking to a friend who has some businesses here, and her insurance has gone up a mere 2,100%. So people are coming back basically just to, just because they want to pay the insurance companies a lot more money, I guess, is the point. I can say, actually, from firsthand observation, that the frequently invisible mayor of New Orleans was in this city last Thursday night. You know that for an actual fact. And now there's other stuff too. The Chinese pet food scandal, and possibly food scandal, grows. At least 2.5 million broiler chickens in Indiana were fed pet food scraps contaminated with melamine, and subsequently sold for human consumption. Melamine. But the buried lead in that story was what attracted my attention, and I'm going to attract yours with it now. U.S. investigators have arrived in China. This is way down at the bottom of the story. U.S. investigators have arrived in China, but inspections of food production facilities there have been hampered by the start of a week-long national vacation. And that's all it takes to stop the inspection of the food thing. Everybody, we're taking a week off. It's China. Quote, essentially all the officials are on holiday, says Walter Batts of the FDA's China team. But he added, one Chinese official had stayed behind to help. See, that's the spirit that we want to see in our Chinese food inspections. President Bush this week told congressional leaders he would veto any legislation that vetoed federal policies or laws on abortion. But the quote is interesting. He said the veto threat would apply to any measures that, quote, allow taxpayer dollars to be used for the destruction of human life, unquote. That would seem to mean that if the Senate and the House pass funds for our troops in Iraq, the president would veto that funding bill, unless it prevents the troops from shooting. A leftover from George Tenet, the former CIA director, has been making the rounds of the television interview broadcast to promote his book. Why didn't I think of that? And, I did. And one of the nuggets that's come out in the second wave of information about it is that, according to George Tenet, Dick Cheney wanted to handpick Iraq's leaders after the fall of Saddam Hussein and limit Iraqi involvement in choosing a new government. You know, because we want a democracy. Cheney and Pentagon officials pressed for the installation of a ruling coalition that included, come on, you know the answer to this one, hands, Ahmed Chalabi, ladies and gentlemen. Ahmed Chalabi would have been President Chalabi. He's the guy who provided bad information on the country's weapons programs. Well, why not install him as president? Then he can feed himself bad information. You see, that makes sense. Tenet writes, rather than risking an open-ended political process that Americans could influence but not control, they wanted to be able to limit the Iraqis' power and handpick those Iraqis who would participate. The plan was never implemented because the administration couldn't agree on Chalabi. You know, and you got to say, with the empathy and the understanding and the love and the thing, that if you've already chosen yourself as vice president, why wouldn't you want to choose the guys to run Iraq? Hello, welcome to the show.
she's cool in the street, smiling from head to feet. I said, hey, what's this? Maybe, baby, she needs a kiss. I said, hey, hey, what's your name, baby? Maybe we can see things the same. Now don't you wait, oh, hesitate. Let's move before they raise the parking rate. All right now, baby, it's all right now. All right now, baby, it's all right now. Go home to my place. I was watching every move on her face. She said, hey, look, what's your game, baby? Are you trying to put me in shame? I said, slow, slow. Oh, don't go so fast. Don't you think that love can last? She said, love, oh, love.
From the edge of Lake Pontchartrain, Louisiana, New Orleans, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. And now, it's time for the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
We are so sorry. The Transportation Security Administration says it's lost a computer hard drive with the personal information of about 100,000 TSA employees. Yes. They're part of Homeland Security, and they lost a computer hard drive. The TSA says it doesn't know if the drive, which contains Social Security numbers and bank account information, is still within its Washington headquarters or was stolen. Well, never too late to find out, boys. It has apologized to its staff and agreed to pay for a year of credit monitoring. And by agreeing to pay, they mean we're paying. The Reverend Jesse Jackson said he's read copies of the off-color jokes, including one about him that New Jersey Assemblyman Peter Biondi had sent in emails, now wants to meet Biondi. Jackson, in a telephone news conference from his Chicago office, said he was stunned when he received calls on a copy of the jokes. He said he was unsure why Biondi, someone he has never met, would pass along a joke about him. "I will not judge him harshly," Jackson said. "I just wonder why I'm the subject of a degrading joke." Biondi apologized publicly this week after sending off two off-color jokes through his personal email in December and February. He said his emails do not represent his sense of humor, beliefs, or values. A copy of the mails given to the local newspaper contains two jokes with racist and sexist overtones. One is about Jackson, while the other alludes to a lynching in the punchline. 20 years ago, Jim Baker was in exile, banished from his televangelism empire, toppled from power by moral indiscretion and accusations of financial improprieties. He resigned as an ordained minister after it was revealed he'd paid $265,000 in alleged hush money to a former church secretary. Name? That's right, Jessica Hahn. Rhymes with Fawn. After a sexual encounter with her 7 years earlier. Now, he's back. "I apologize," Baker said in a telephone interview nearly 20 years to the day after his resignation. "I am so sorry if I've ever hurt anyone or embarrassed you because of my failures. I say, please forgive me." Timing of his apology is interesting. He's now in Branson, Missouri, with his new wife, Lori, and he's launched a new television ministry, The Jim Baker Show. "The amazing thing is I'm back on television," he says. "It's what I know, what I do. It's my calling." Thank God he's not a minister. Sony Corporation has issued an apology for using a freshly slaughtered goat as a prop at its God of War 2 video game launch party in Athens, a publicity stunt that has outraged animal rights activists. Sony hosted 20 journalists at the March 1st event, which it called a theatrical dramatization with a Greek mythological theme. The goat, provided to the production company by a local butcher, was part of the set dressing, the company said. Just make sure you strike the set. Heiress Paris Hilton will spend 45 days in jail after a Los Angeles court found her guilty of driving with a suspended license. You know that. Here's how she defended herself in court. She was not aware of the suspension, despite the judge highlighting a document that she had signed, noting she would not be able to drive. She said, "From now on, I want to pay complete attention to everything. I just want to say, I'm sorry." At which point, the judge sentenced her to 45 days, and Paris's mother shouted at the judge, "You're pathetic." And she meant the judge. She said, Paris Hilton said, she didn't know she wasn't supposed to drive, and she blamed her handlers. The United Nations apologized officially to Sudan. That's where the Darfur genocide is going on. The UN apologized to Sudan for leaking a report to the New York Times which accused the government of flying weapons into Darfur in violation of UN Security Council resolutions. Well, that's a good reason to apologize to a country that's conducting a genocide. Dateline Camden, New Jersey, and emotional New Jersey Governor John Corzine apologized for setting a poor example in the car accident in which his vehicle was speeding and he was not wearing a seatbelt. "I will work very hard to set the right kind of example," he said. He was released from the hospital in a wheelchair. He broke his left leg, several ribs, a collarbone, and his sternum. His car was driven by a state police officer going 91 miles an hour because he had to get to that meeting between Don Imus and the Rutgers women's basketball team. Nobody's ever explained to me why he had to be there or who decided he was going to be there. Did he self-select? Inquiring minds. Finally, Dateline Fort Lauderdale, Florida, Broward County Mayor Josephus Egelition Jr., man, apologized for the seemingly anti-gay statement someone made over the PA system at Fort Lauderdale International Airport earlier this week, catching the attention of two gay men. They heard the message about 1 a.m. Tuesday while waiting for their bags after returning from Chicago. Someone entered the PA system at our airport, and over that PA system, they uttered a statement that is found in Leviticus 20:13. Egelition said at a news conference, the verse reads in the Old Testament, Quote, if a man has sexual relations with a man as one does with a woman, both of them have done what is detestable. They'll be put to death, their blood will be on their own hands. Heads, unquote. The mayor said he wasn't sure who was responsible for delivering the message, but added the individual would have had access to the PA system code. He offered an apology of his own. The Broward County Sheriff's Office is investigating. Maybe the FAA, maybe the TSA. Somebody got to the PA system in an airport, ladies and gentlemen. Now they just angered gays. The Apologies of the Week copyrighted feature of this broadcast. I feel safer. It's costing Americans $1.5 million a day to build a facility to safely treat millions of gallons of radioactive and toxic waste stored at the Hanford Nuclear Reservation's leak-prone underground tanks. The project completion will mean $38 for every man, woman, and child in the nation if the $11 billion price tag doesn't grow even further. It's nearly tripled in less than 6 years. This is cleaning up the Hanford Nuclear Weapons Facility. But they were making weapons. They weren't making civilian nuclear power. Cleaning that up is going to be easier, don't you think? Really? Don't you think? This is a critical time for the project, according to the Seattle Post-Intelligencer. An increasingly impatient Congress is now deciding how much money to contribute to the effort. Some fear lawmakers could simply wash their hands of it and walk away. The challenge of safely disposing of 53 million gallons of deadly waste left over from decades of plutonium production has caused the U.S. Department of Energy and its contractors to stumble repeatedly. Weak, even negligent management has pushed the project's completion from 2011 to 2017 or later and driven costs up by billions, according to reports from, among others, the United States Army Corps of Engineers. Which, by the way, reminds me of another story in New Orleans this week. We had a big rain storm on Friday, and parts of the city flooded. Not because we're a bowl, well, maybe because we're a bowl, but because the pumps, that the world-class pumps that have historically cleared water from New Orleans pretty fast, some of them had to be shut down for a little while. And some of them couldn't pump water to where it normally goes, which is the canals that lead into Lake Pontchartrain, because the levees lining those canals haven't been fixed quite yet. From where I'm sitting, ladies and gentlemen, you can, if you walked outside, you could see half a dozen construction cranes where the Corps of Engineers, literally a block away, is working feverishly. They're working Sunday, that's how feverishly, to fix these levees on these canals still. And they have, in the meantime, set the safe water level in those canals so low that when the flash flooding started in the city, the pumping agencies couldn't pump the water into those canals because it would have exceeded the Corps' safe water level. Yes, we feel safe. What's your problem? How about our friend Pakistan? They're good, nice people doing nice things. Pakistan has set up a Dateline Islamabad. Pakistan has set up a new authority under its foreign ministry to control and regulate the export of goods and materials that could contribute to clandestine nuclear, biological, or missile development programs. That happened this week, ladies and gentlemen. They're going to control and regulate the export of goods that might help build nuclear bombs. Of course, you know, it was A.Q. Khan's program. He was the father of Pakistan's nuclear weaponry that sent materials, tutorials to North Korea, Iran, and Libya, teaching them how to make nuclear weapons. Pakistan's our ally. And so A.Q. Khan, the guy who spearheaded that proliferation program, is under house arrest in Pakistan. And the United States has been forbidden by the Pakistani government to talk to him for intelligence purposes. But now a new agency set up in Pakistan to control all this. The foreign ministry said the export of restricted items will require approval of the new authority, the Strategic Export Control Division. The setting up of this new authority was envisaged by a law passed when A.Q. Khan was busted 3 years ago. Never too late, Department. Yet this from London. Pakistan might still be involved in illicit trading and smuggling to procure equipment from black markets to run its nuclear program. Here's a switcheroo. This is from editors of a dossier that came out this week on the AQ Khan program. They warn that Khan's associates appeared to have escaped law enforcement attention. While we were worrying about Saddam getting and proliferating nuclear weapons, AQ Khan in Pakistan was doing that, and even when he was busted, his associates apparently have, quote, escaped law enforcement attention. They could, after a period of lying low, resume their black market business. These British editors say many questions about the AQ Khan network remain unanswered. Maybe that's because nobody's been able to ask him. When asked by a Pakistani journalist to what extent the support to other countries might have affected Pakistan's nuclear program, one of the authors said it was true Pakistan still needed the required support to maintain its nukes. But Pakistan was facing serious restrictions on the international level and might be involved in the illicit trade of Pakistan of nuclear equipment. One more piece about this business. A robust command and control system. This is from the Pakistani Daily Times. A robust command and control system is now in place. Yes, I emphasize the now. To protect Pakistan's nuclear assets from diversion, theft, and accidental misuse. Khan Research Laboratories is now confined exclusively to enrichment work. Well, that's the kind of work the Iranians are doing. This is the conclusion of this dossier from the International Institute of Strategic Studies. It says Pakistan's reforms go some way towards overcoming the international opprobrium and label of irresponsibility the country earned as a result of the Khan saga. However, it says there are still too many unanswered questions about the role Pakistani technology played in aiding the nuclear programs in Iran and North Korea for other countries to conclude that Pakistan has done all it can to account for Khan's activities. Our friends, ladies and gentlemen, Pakistan. You know, ladies and gentlemen, it's not just the United States that's having problems with voting systems. Scotland had elections this week in which the Labour Party of Tony Blair was kind of repudiated. The polls have been hit by major problems with 7 counts suspended in the early evening. Up to 100,000 paper ballots spoiled. Serious technical failures had delayed the announcement of some results. Confusion about how to fill in ballot papers and problems with mail-in voting, there's a good idea, have also been blamed for the problems. And there's an electronic counting system which experienced some failures as well. The Independent Electoral Commission will undertake a statutory review into the conduct of this election. The election may end up being rerun. Nah, I wouldn't bet on it. So it's apparently this democracy thing not as easy as we keep telling the Iraqis it might be. Afghan President Karzai declared this week that his government can no longer accept civilian casualties caused by U.S.-led operations. Well, they were good up to now. Shortly before the news spread that as many as 51 civilians may have died during clashes this week in far western Pakistan. Civilian deaths are becoming a heavy burden. We're not happy about it, Karzai said. And there's a report in Sunday's Washington Post that more than one-third of U.S. soldiers in Iraq surveyed by the Army said they believe torture should be allowed if it helps gather important information about insurgents. 4 in 10 would approve of torture if it would save the life of a fellow soldier. How would you know? Well, you'd take your best shot. Two-thirds of Marines, half the Army troops surveyed said they would not report a team member for mistreating a civilian or for destroying civilian property unnecessarily. Less than half of soldiers and Marines believe that non-combatants, i.e. civilians, should be treated with dignity and respect. There's hearts and minds going down the toilet right there. 10% of the troops in the survey conducted by the Army reported they had mistreated civilians in Iraq, such as kicking them or needlessly damaging their possessions. Hey, it's just stuff. The troops' statements are at odds with soldiers' rules, says Major General Gail Pollack. The report is positive news. What it speaks to is the leadership that the military is providing because they're not acting on those thoughts. They're not torturing the people, she says. The more often soldiers are deployed, the longer they're deployed each time, the less time they spend at home, the more likely they are to suffer mental health problems. Well, that's unacceptable. Or not. Military experts say Iraq can be a more stressful environment than Vietnam. There were rear areas, pardon the expression, in Vietnam that were considered safe, but in Iraq there are no truly secure areas outside the big bases. 20% of the soldiers surveyed, 15% of the Marines appeared to suffer from depression, anxiety, or stress. More than 40% of the soldiers reported low morale in their units. That's the good news? All right, then. And George Tenet, as I say, has been interviewed all over the place. The follow-up interviews that I've seen, such as the one on Meet the Press, seem to focus more on the conflict between Tenet's statements about what he thought the CIA thought it knew and what the administration said it knew in the case of Dick Cheney, without a doubt. Just Google the words no doubt and Dick Cheney for some weekend recreation. But for some reason, the only Scott Pelley on 60 Minutes seems to have gone into the issue with George Tenet of, quote, enhanced interrogation techniques. Things such as waterboarding. Tenet refused to talk about specific techniques, said enhanced interrogation techniques had been a big intelligence success, and then continually repeated to Scott Pelley, we don't torture people. Listen to me, Scott. We don't torture people. Waterboarding, whereby a client is strapped to a board and submerged in water repeatedly to simulate the effects of drowning, to stimulate the sensation of drowning, to focus the mind. That has been widely reported as one of the enhanced interrogation techniques. And in fact, check me if I'm wrong, I believe this is true. A U.S. soldier in the Vietnam War was court-martialed for waterboarding, a VC. So at that time, the U.S. thought it was torture. But George Tenet doesn't believe it now. Won't quite confirm that that's what enhanced interrogation techniques include, but memos and other stuff that's come out do indicate that's part of the portfolio of techniques. And, you know, it's one thing to deny that it's torture, but that's really not enough to change the image of waterboarding.
Well, it may not be legal, but it should as heck makes me safer. And it may not yield useful intel, at least that's what they say. But it's a pleasure so rare, seeing captives gulp air. Let's go waterboarding, USA. Let's go.
Let's go waterboarding. surfing, 'cause you can't get off if you want to. And it's really hard work, but for us it feels much more like play. If the tables were turned, we'd feel really burned. But let's go water. But don't
'cause I'm gonna be true if you let me. You're gonna love me like nobody loved me. Come rain or come shine, happy together, unhappy together, and I won't it be fine. Days may be cloudy or sunny, when are we out of the money? I'm with you all. Would you rain or shine? If it's sad or funny, cloudy or sunny, in the eye of the money.
This is Le Show, and the new Iraq, ladies and gentlemen, comes to our attention as a high-level advisory panel of the United States government has placed Iraq on a watch list of countries that violate religious freedom, saying the government there engages in extrajudicial killings based on religious identities. The government, not some militias, the government. The U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom stopped short of naming Iraq a, quote, country of particular concern, that's the label reserved for the worst of the worst, which it was when it was run by Saddam Hussein. That designation was dropped after the little thing. Most of the Democrats on the 10-member commission wanted to list Iraq among the worst. Most of the commission's Republicans pushed for Iraq to be placed on the watch list. The commission's report says the decision was made with the understanding that Iraq may be designated a country of particular concern next year if improvements are not made, i.e., if it's the same as it is this year, it'll be worse next year. In 7 years of reports, there's only been a formal dissent once. This year was the second time. Commission members said the Bush administration paid an unusual amount of attention, according to the Washington Post, to their deliberations this year, and that the Iraq decision required three votes to reach a consensus, with some members changing positions. Ouch. That sounds painful. We wouldn't want to let politics interfere in the determination of whether a country is a country of particular concern, would we? Of course not. The inspector general who uncovered cases of waste, fraud, and abuse in the U.S.-led reconstruction effort in Iraq, news of inspectors general, ladies and gentlemen, he is under investigation by the White House. Stuart Bowen Jr., the special investigator, inspector general for Iraqi reconstruction, is under investigation after complaints were made by former employees about his work habits and work he required employees to perform. The investigation is headed by the Integrity Committee of the President's Council on Integrity, which is made up of inspectors general appointed by the president. Former employees filed complaints saying Bowen didn't show up for work for long periods of time in 2004. He also had supposedly employees work on a book that is to explain the lessons of Iraqi reconstruction, which pulled them away from audits. His office declined to comment on the allegation. His latest report on Monday said Iraq was still plagued by power failures, inadequate oil production, shortages of clean water, and health care problems. That wouldn't make the Iraqis wonder about us, would it? In the most recent quarter, his inspectors reviewed eight projects and found that seven of them were not well maintained and may not function as well or as long as planned. Bowen was counsel to the transition team for the Bush-Cheney campaign in 2000. He was Bush's legal advisor when Bush was governor of Texas. I say throw him overboard. Not that that's, you know, a pattern. A senior Bush political appointee at the Interior Department who revised scientific reports to minimize protection of endangered species has resigned. Julie McDonald, Deputy Assistant Secretary for Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, had been criticized by Interior's Inspector General. And the Inspector General of the Department of Commerce is himself the subject of three separate government investigations into allegations he misspent his budget and retaliated against employees who raised concerns about his actions. He declined to comment. He referred to, his name is Johnny E. Frazier. He referred reporters to a statement from his office as acting legal counsel Carolyn Croak. That's unfortunate. Which said that officials in his office are cooperating fully. Among the accusations, that he cut short a governmental conference so he and senior managers could go gambling in Atlantic City. Inspectors General, ladies and gentlemen, are front line in the war against waste, fraud, and abuse. Is that a war? Is that a war yet? It's all wars. It's all wars. That's when I want to start. Thousands of people living along the... This is F is for FEMA news. Thousands of people living along the Mississippi River. They're protected by one of the world's largest levee systems, but they could be forced to buy flood insurance as a result of a directive from FEMA spawned by fears of a Katrina-type failure. Well, why would they fail? They were built by the Army Corps. FEMA is attaching warnings to updated flood insurance rate maps for communities across the nation protected from the so-called 100-year flood by levees. They advise the structures could fail with devastating consequences and urge property owners to buy flood insurance. Lower Mississippi Valley, a $12 billion system, 3,500 miles of 30-foot tall levees, has held the nation's mightiest river in check for 80 years. It's devastating this whole valley, says George Gruggett, executive vice president of the Mississippi Valley Flood Control Association. Local flood control officials say FEMA's warning is so alarming it likely will prompt mortgage lenders to begin requiring flood insurance for homes and businesses in scores of communities behind levees, including Memphis. Hey, Memphis, you'll find out what it's like. A requirement for flood insurance in levied communities could drive away economic development and cost homeowners hundreds of dollars annually, says U.S. Representative Marion Barry of Arkansas. Not the same one, I don't think. I don't think the bitch set him up. Quote, this policy is another example of FEMA's complete incompetence and lack of knowledge of what it takes to protect and serve the American people. Unquote. And that's just, you know, just scaring him into thinking what happened in New Orleans might happen to them. But why would it happen? Because their levees were built by the Army. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news from outside the bubble. This from the Guardian newspaper, although it's about us. U.S. troops in Iraq have reacted angrily to Pentagon restrictions aimed at curbing internet postings from war zones. The Pentagon cited the risk of providing sensitive information to insurgents. Blogs and emails from troops in the field can often be extraordinarily vivid. Now, the Pentagon says blogs have to be cleared first with officers. Soldiers said the real reason for the curbs were their negative comments about the war, including skepticism about George Bush's claims about progress. You don't want the troops spoiling the morale of the troops. BBC Radio 1 was forced to withdraw a song this week after it emerged that the highly played song was a thinly disguised commercial for a brand of hair gel. The electro track, called Style Attract Play by Shaka, featuring Honey Shot, apparently, program directors didn't notice that Style Attract Play is the slogan for the hair product range Shockwaves. Honey Shot, the supposed group, was created by an advertising firm as a pop group that can be bought, quote, off the shelf by companies to covertly promote their brands. In an interview with the British Sunday Times, Andrew Wilkie, managing director of GUM, the advertising agency's content division, which created Honey Shot, said it offered a wealth of opportunity. Quote, it could be as simple as sponsorship of a tour to clothing that could be worn, drinks, cosmetics, all that stuff is possible. Honey Shot. From the Times of London, owned by Rupert Murdoch, two major food merchants in England have been accused of selling farmed salmon as wild. One of seven samples of salmon sold as wild by supermarkets was farmed. This is the first evidence that consumers are being duped and paying high prices for salmon that is not wild, but which can carry a premium price up to 10 times more than farmed fish. Is that happening here? We don't know yet. And finally, news from outside the bubble. British Muslims have been radicalized by the British government's disastrous policies in the Middle East, so claims the Church of England, quoted in the Sunday Telegraph. In a scathing critique of foreign policy under Tony Blair, the church condemns the litany of errors made in Iraq, adding that Britain's image abroad has been tarnished and it stands isolated in Europe because of its subservience to the United States administration. Rowan Williams, the Archbishop of Canterbury, isn't he Mr. Bean? Oh, that's a donor. Has endorsed the report, which says Britain is being turned into a hotbed of terrorist recruitment because of the occupation of Iraq. In other words, we went there and they did come here. If the here is Britain, we're there so that they can come here, is what the Church of England is now saying, ladies and gentlemen. Ain't that a switcheroo? Rather than help to fight fanaticism, Britain's participation in the war on terror has provided al-Qaeda with propaganda to attract Muslims opposed to the idea of Western hegemony being foisted upon the Middle East. Quote, arguably the greatest impediment to prospective gains in the war on terror is the galvanizing effect the Iraq occupation has had on terrorist recruitment, morale, and capability, the document says. The radicalization of some sections of European Muslim society, it continues, has been confirmed and intensified by the ongoing occupation of Iraq. Unquote. The Church of England. News from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Following up on their interview with George Tenet last week, 60 Minutes This Week has Lou Dobbs. Why would they have Lou Dobbs? Oh, I see. He's not only on CNN, he's now a contributor to CBS's Early Morning Show, or whatever it's called. And, you know, it might be a good idea for him to get a second gig away from CNN.
I'm Lou Dobbs. Monday night, our continuing story of broken borders and exporting America crosses a dramatic new threshold.
I'm Rajiv Rajeshpuran in Bangalore, where Time Warner today announced it's outsourcing the anchoring of CNN's Lou Dobbs Tonight program.
Rajiv, does this mean that anchors such as myself are out of a job?
Lou, this isn't about anchors such as yourself. This is about you. And no, you're not out of a job as long as you agree to move to Bangalore.
And accept the local prevailing wage.
For anchors.
But, Rajiv, I cover what's happening to America, to its borders, to its jobs, to its economy. New York is the financial capital of the world. Seems to me I have to be here.
Lou, it seems that way to you, but it may not seem that way to Time Warner executives. Oh, it's all available on the Internet anyway.
Join me Monday night when the news hits home. And I'm not just pretending to be pissed anymore.
And Lou, tentatively, pending your decision to move, your replacement looks like it's going to be me.
It's time for answers. Monday night.
I'm changing my name to Lou.
One, two, one, two, three, yeah, yeah!
Jerry's coming, so is Sue. Crawfish jumping on the big bayou. Bring some bait for the crawfish line. You bring your bag, I'll bring mine. Crawfish, crawfish,
And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the warm. Won't you?
Soft, listen to the warm.
Arctic sea ice is melting at a rate far quicker than predicted by climate change computer models. They got models doing that? Wow, that sounds sexy. And could disappear completely before the middle of the century, scientists now warn. The study says the actual rate at which summer sea ice in the Arctic had shrunk per decade during the past 50 years was more than three times faster than the average of the most highly regarded climate simulations. Declining ice levels pose a threat to Arctic wildlife, including polar bears, walruses, and ringed seals. Fewer baby seals for the Canadians to beat. Freshwater animals and insects will be devastated as rivers and streams warm up over the next 50 years, researchers say. Every 1 degree centigrade rise is likely to kill a fifth of the tiny creatures upon which fish and birds depend for survival. Researchers at the University of Cardiff studied streams and whales. They found that over the past 25 years, temperatures in 14 streams and rivers have risen by about an average of a degree and a half. Under current trends, they would heat up by at least 2 degrees more over the next 50 years. The number of macroinvertebrates, such as stonefly and mayfly larvae, could fall by up to 21%. And that's what salmon and bats eat. We don't want that, do we? Do we want that? Oh, and there's also a rise in tick-borne diseases in the United Kingdom as a result of warming. That's all. Governments are running out of time to address climate change and to avoid the worst effects of rising temperatures, says an influential UN panel. Greater energy efficiency, renewable electricity sources, and new technology to dump carbon dioxide underground can all help, but there could be as little as 8 years left to avoid a dangerous global average rise of 2 degrees centigrade or more. This is from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. It says most of the technology needed to stop climate change in its tracks already exist, but the governments must act quickly to force through changes. Delays will make the problem more difficult and more expensive. Hey, I vote for more difficult and more expensive.
Break me nervous.
Yes, they do.
Oh, yes, they do.
You know they do.
If I take her to the show, I got to tell everything that happened. And if I don't be back about a quarter to six, man, I'm in a terrible fix. The secret service, they make me nervous.
They make me nervous.
Yes, they do. Oh, yes, they do.
You know they do.
When I'm walking beside her, the people tell me I'm lucky. Yes, I know I'm lucky. I remember the day that I met her. But the secret service, they make me nervous. They make me nervous. Oh, yes, they do.
You know they do.
I know you got that something, and I think that you understand. But when I say that something, I wanna hold your hand. But the Secret Service, they make me nervous.
They make me nervous.
Oh, yes, they do.
You know they do.
When I hold you close to me, I wanna tell you just how I feel. Darling, darling, I love you. You know my love is real. But the Secret Service, they make me nervous.
They
make me nervous.
Yes, they do.
You know they do.
Now, children,
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USEN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, up around the world via the internet at two different locations on your computer, live and archived whenever you want at harryshearer.com and kcrw.com, on Mighty 104 in Berlin, on Sirius and XM satellite radio, available as a free download at www.audible.com/theshow, and available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And it'd be just like Waterboarding USA being part of a new CD that's coming out soon, if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much, The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. A tip of the Le Show chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh desks. San Diego and Pittsburgh desks. And to Bob Dunn here at WWNO New Orleans for helping with today's broadcast. Le Show playlists available, usually, at harryshearer.com. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. So long from New Orleans.